Morning. Today's daf in Bechoros is daf Zayin. We're in Vav Amud Beis. A discussion off the Mishnah. Mishnah goes back to Hey Amud Beis. The Mishnah mentions two halachas. One, offspring of a Bechor that comes out partially mutated. So it's not a full replication of its mother. It's partially mutated. So the Mishnah taught us that based on the fact that the Torah repeats itself, Petach Hamor two times. So that means to say that Achei Avlad Hamor Vahanolad Chamor. So in Hashem, sorry, Achiya Yulad Chamor Vahanolad Chamor. So in order for there to be Kedushas Bechor, so the Mishnah teaches us that there has to be replication. You have to have similar traits between the mother and its offspring. Now I say similar traits, and I speak very specifically, meaning to say that it has to have mixas among them. It has to have some partial traits which connect the two, physical features that connect the two. However, if they are so dissimilar from one another, what comes out is a fully mutated offspring, so then it's not going to be chayv and kedushas bechor. The Mishnah then goes on to discuss the halachas of ma'achalos asuros, meaning what happens if we discuss a similar circumstance of mutation, and what would be the halacha regarding achila, meaning the first half of the Mishnah talked about kedushas bechor. The second half of the Mishnah, umahim ba'achila, so behema Torah shi'aldekim in behema tameh, muter ba'achila utameh shi'aldekim in behema Torah, asa ba'achila she'yotze min ha'tameh tameh ve'yotze min ha'tarah tohar. So the Mishnah says that as a result, as it relates to ma'achalos asuros, so there we're super clear. As long as it's derived from a kosher animal, so it is going to be kosher. And if it's a product of something which is not kosher, so it is not going to be kosher. The Mishnah is extraordinarily clear that for vis-a-vis the threshold of machalos asuros, so as long as it's derived from a kosher source, it is going to be kosher. The Gemara had a really interesting discussion yesterday regarding milk. Milk that comes from a camel, kosher or not kosher? So based on the rule, it's pretty much a no-brainer. The milk that comes from a camel is a non-kosher animal, so therefore the milk derived from a non-kosher animal should not be kosher, and it should be pretty much the end of the discussion. And meanwhile, in yesterday's daf on Vav Amud Beis, so we spent a considerable amount of time trying to extract drushas in terms of how we know that the milk of a camel is not going to be kosher. Either we learn it out from the repetition of Gamal Gamal. It says Gamal one time in Shmini. It says Gamal a second time in Parshas Re'eh. Shnei pa'amim echad Gamal hanolam. I'm sorry. Echad. No, not that drasha. So the chad la'asar atma v'chad la'asar chalba. Okay. So one possibility is because of the repetition of the word Gamal. Another possibility, said the Gemara, is that it's derived from the es ha-gamal. And the es is serving as a ribui. Not only is the camel going to be not kosher, but the milk is going to be not kosher as well. And the Gemara asked the question yesterday, why am I looking for an extra drasha? Shouldn't I already know that the milk of a camel is not kosher based on the simple rules we learned in yesterday's daf? Call it yotzei min ha'tameh tameh. If it's coming from something that's not kosher, it's not kosher. So then what am I gaining? Why am I looking for an additional drasha? That was the Gemara's question yesterday. And the answer of the Gemara also really interesting. Well, the Gemara says, when you think about it, why should milk be permitted at all? Why should milk be permitted? Milk could be one of two things. Either it is converted blood, meaning the Gemara makes the observation, the physiological observation that after a woman is given birth and she's nursing, so she's producing milk, so she's not bleeding, she's not menstruating. So milk must be converted blood. That's one possibility. If that's true, so we know blood, of course, is prohibited. And if milk is just but converted blood, so what the Torah is basically saying is milk is coming from something which is prohibited, but milk for whatever reason is okay. Now that you have that argument, so the Gemara pointed out, so now you take that argument and you plug it into the milk of a camel, no different. Meaning, I know kol hayotzei min ha'tameh tameh, but milk is different. It must be different. That's why we have the additional drasha for milk. The other possibility of the Gemara is that even if you're not going to subscribe to this idea, that milk is but converted blood, but you know what milk is? Milk is something that comes from a aver min ha'chai. It's basically no different than taking the ripping off the limb of an animal and eating that limb. That's aver min ha'chai. Milk is something that's coming off of a live animal. And so therefore, the live animal is aser mishum aver min ha'chai. The milk should also be aser. And yet the Torah allows for the consumption of milk. So what difference does it make whether there's coming aver min ha'chai, which is a cow, or aver min ha'chai, which is a camel? Should be the same. That's why we have the additional drasha. Okay, so two possibilities in the Gemara yesterday, why it is that we need additional drushas for milk and the allowance of milk. With that stated, we can pick it up right now where we left off yesterday. That's a that was a summary of what we saw. And the Gemara now, Chav de Behema Torah Minal de Shari. So we are two-thirds of the way down on Vav Amid Beis. The Gemara asks now a really straightforward question. Okay, so the milk of a camel is prohibited. The milk of a cow is permitted. To which the Gemara now wonders, the milk of a cow now is permitted. Like, okay, why do we assume that that's so? Meaning we just gave two very strong arguments why the milk should be prohibited. And meanwhile, the milk of a cow is permitted. And where do we see that? Where is that most evident? So one possibility, which is probably what you thought, is, well, if the Torah is prohibiting meat and milk cooked together, and that means each one of them separately is permitted, so isn't that your source? Isn't that where you see most clearly in the Torah that milk by itself is permitted? The Gemara says not necessarily. We could argue. Here's what we could say. We could say that milk by itself, you're not allowed to eat. You are allowed to get benefit from milk. And what happens when I cook meat and milk together? A new iser, an additional iser, has formed on the milk. The milk was already aser ba'achila, and now that you cook it together with meat, it's aser ba'ana as well. That's what we could argue. And even according to Rabbi Shimon, if you remember back in Chulin, who says that milk and meat is only aser ba'achila and not aser ba'ana, so according to Rabbi Shimon, so what do we gain by cooking meat and milk together? So the gain is very simple. I don't mean gain meaning benefit, but like, in other words, what's the additional iser? And so for that, it's very simple. You get malchus for just simply the act of cooking meat and milk. So the iser basa b'chalav is not really revelatory on the idea that milk by itself has to be mutter. Now, again, we all know what the conclusion is. Milk, of course, is mutter. But the where's the source for it? So the Gemara says, okay, what about Psula HaMukdashim? A topic we're going to be discussing extensively as we get to the second half of Seder Kachim, which we're in right now, and that is when you have a carbon that has a blemish that was redeemed. So even though it is a redeemed carbon, and that means it no longer has Kedusha Saguf, but it has some residual Kedusha. What you're not allowed to do is you're not allowed to shear the animal, you're not allowed to milk the animal, you can shech the animal and eat the animal, but that's it. Now over here, you're not allowed to shear it and you're not allowed to milk it. What's the clear implication? That if we're talking about an animal that's just standard chulin animal, so you're allowed to milk it and presumably drink the milk. So the Gemara says, so again, the Gemara says, if you're looking for an absolute proof, a definitive proof, this is not it. Because here's what we could argue. We could argue that milk by itself is generally usr. I, psulei hamukdashim, what's the extra isr? It's also usr bahana. It's not definitive proof. So the Gemara says, okay, what about the Pasuk of Mishlei? The Pasuk of Mishlei describes how the chalav izim, the milk of goats, and the bread for your house, and it sounds like these are the things that you're going to be benefiting from. And again, the Gemara says, v'dum l'schora. So the Gemara says, wonderful. So that just simply means that we're going to be benefiting from milk. We could milk our animals, and we could sell the milk. So once again, it's not a definitive proof. So Ela midachsev esaseres charitzei achalav, I'm sorry, charitzei achalav. So the Gemara says, okay, what about in Shmuel? In Sefer Shmuel. When Yishai sends David over provisions over to battle, and he sends milk. And so presumably, so that's the soldiers can drink it, right? V'dum l'schara, the Gemara says, okay, maybe what Yishai was sending the milk for is so that they have milk now on the battlefield so that they could turn around and sell the milk and so that the brothers, the Yishai's children could benefit from the sale. To which the Gemara says that's really implausible. Atu dakusha mecham l'schara, yeah. That's during wartime, that's what's going to happen, yeah. Right? You're going to be selling milk. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says that's really implausible. Most probably the milk was for drinking purposes. And obviously, I could say better. I could say that definitely was for drinking purposes. But right now, in the context of our Gemara, where we're seeking a source of how do I know that milk is permitted, so this is a pretty good source. You know, one of the ways that we praise Eretz Yisrael is that it's referred to as Eretz Zavat Chalav Devash. I know the song's popularized this, but the But certainly the Gemara makes the following argument. You're going to praise something in which we're not allowed to enjoy and benefit from. And when I say benefit, I mean consume. Gemara says, once again, that's highly unlikely. And so that means to say that milk is permitted. Again, a pretty good proof. And the Gemara also cites another pasuk in Yeshayahu describing how it is that we're going to be able to purchase wine and milk, putting wine and milk in the same sentence. Again, seemingly a good proof. We have no absolute concrete pasuk, neither in the Torah or in the Nevi'im or Ksuvim, that say definitively that milk is permitted, but we all know it's so. The Gemara's exercise over here is which psukim could really most highlight this idea that milk is permitted. Of course, we know the conclusion. The Gemara just simply wanted to see where it is most evident. Elameata. So the Gemara says, okay, now we're going to go back full circle to what we saw yesterday. Based on the repetition of gamal gamal, so we learned that the camel is usher and the milk of the camel is usher as well. So the Gemara says, Elameata, shafan shafan, arneves arneves, chazir chazir, lahanu hudase. So the Gemara says, what about all the other repetitions? Meaning the camel is not the only animal in the Torah that's highlighted two times. Once in Parsha Shmini, a second time in Parsha Re'eh. There are other animals, Shafan, Arneves, Chazir. By the way, the common denominator between these four animals is that each one of these four animals only has one of the kosher simanim. Two kosher simanim that render an animal kosher. Once but hooves, two, it chews its cud. These four animals only demonstrate one of the simanim. The chazir has split hooves but does not chew its cud. And the arnevis, shafan, and gamal, they have split hooves but they chew their cud but they don't have split hooves. Anyway, the Torah repeats them both in Parsha Shmini and Parsha Srei. We just got done darshaning the gamal two times. And you want to tell me now that the others are also going to be darshaned two times? Ella. So the Gemara says, and you know the Braisa. Well, if you don't, we are going to see it in just a moment. We saw this Braisa back in Chulin. Why does the Torah go through the exercise of repeating all the non-kosher animals in Parshas Re'eh? And the answer is, for one Chiddush. Sometimes an entire Parsha is repeated, even though it only introduces one Chiddush. So by animal, the Chiddush is Shesua. The Shesua is the animal that demonstrates two vertebrae. Okay, certainly a mutation, but such an animal is going to be prohibited. By the bird, the ra'ah. We already went through in Masechta Chulin extensively how in Parsha Shmini, so there are, now my numbers are not good, right? It's either 22 or 21. Okay, I forget off the top of my head. There are 24 types of birds altogether that are not kosher. But if you actually go through the list in Parsha Shmini and in Parsha Re'eh, you'll see that you will either list is not going to get you to 24. One is going to get you to 21 or 22. The other one's going to get you to either 21 or 22. Please forgive me. I forgot exactly how much it is. And you'll notice that there are slight discrepancies in the names of the animals. In the names of the birds. So, for example, the Ra'ah, which is mentioned in Parshas Re'eh, is not mentioned in Parshas Shmini. There you have the Da'ah and other birds that are mentioned, but not the Ra'ah. So, basically, what the Gemara in Chulin did is that if you take the lists and you kind of and you put them together, you're going to come up with 24 birds. The Gemara in Chulin went through that process of how to get to the number 24. So for that, the list of birds were repeated in Parshas Re'eh. So gama gama hachinam elachidasa. So the Gemara says, and can we say the same thing by the repetition of the camel? Meaning, there doesn't have to be anything inherently additional to the camel in which necessitated its repetition. It could just simply be it's repeated for the sake of repetition and for adding that one additional point. So the Gemara says, Kol hechadik alimidrash tarshina. The Gemara says, as a rule, that's generally true. However, if there is a drasha opportunity, so we're going to make a drasha opportunity. And by virtue of the fact that camels repeat it twice, and we know that the camel now is prohibited by the first mention, so the second mention is therefore coming to teach us about the milk of the camel.
So for the others, there are two repeated.
The Gemara says, just for the sake of an additional chiddush, a setup, if you will. Tana Rabbanan. We are now on the bottom of Vav Amud Beis and a lengthy discussion within the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. Now, again, we already know that there are two separate topics of yesterday's daf. The first topic was Bechor. When is an animal going to have Kedushas Bechor? And the answer is that there must be some replication where the offspring somewhat looks like its mother. If, however, it is totally dissimilar, it's a full mutation, so then it's not going to have Kedushas Bechor. Good. That was the first half of yesterday's daf. The second half of yesterday's daf, Machal Sasuros, forbidden foods. So for that, so we said that there does not have to be any replication whatsoever. As long as what it comes out of is something which is kosher, it is going to be kosher. Good. And now we're going to visit the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon now is going to be certainly more stringent, if you will, by Bechor. As we're going to see in just a moment, Rabbi Shimon says that when it comes to Bechor, so you need almost full replication, right? The language we're going to see together in just a moment is Achihe Rosho Verubo Doma Le'imo. So the head and the majority of its body has to look like its mother. So for Bechor, we know for sure that he does not agree with our Mishnah, and he is going to require more for Kedushas Bechor. What we're going to be discussing first half of today's daf is Rabbi Shimon going to be also disagreeing regarding the halachas of machalas asuros, meaning vis-a-vis the halachas of kashrus? Is he also going to have this threshold of, I need the head and the majority of its body to replicate its mother in order for it to be kosher? Or for kashrus, maybe no. Maybe he agrees that kol ha-yotzei min ha-tahor tahor. That's going to be the first half of today's daf. And I'm happy to report the Gemara is going to have a very clear conclusion. Although I'm also happy to report that the entire analysis of today's daf is going to be surrounding Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint, which is not the accepted viewpoint, but Torah he is still part of the corpus of Torah. And so therefore the Gemara will be spending a full amud of daf discussing the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. And then the rest of today's daf, super interesting, we're going to be discussing byproducts of an animal that are, even though the animal itself is not going to be permitted, but the byproducts are going to be permitted. Now, that violates the rule of our Mishnah, but if I could just summarize the second half of today's daf in one word, honey. Honey is a wonderful example of a byproduct of an animal. The animal itself we're not allowed to eat. Bees are forbidden for consumption. That is one of the shratzim, right? Shratzei ha'of. Right, crawling things that fly, and yet the byproduct of it is going to be kosher. That's the second half of today's daf. Let's see all this inside. Tanu Rabbanan. Rachel she'yaldam in eiz ve'eish yaldam in rachel p'turim in a bechora. So if you have a sheep giving birth to a min eiz, something that's similar to a goat, or an eiz yaldam min rachel, so then it's going to be exempt from bechor. V'im b'ish bo mitzvah samanim chayefes. However, if there's partial resemblance, so then it's going to be chayef. It's wonderful. It's what we learned in yesterday's daf. It's the opinion that we are used to hearing. Good. That's the Tanakama. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ashiyei Rosho Verubo Doma Le'imo. Now Rabbi Shimon says, no, that in order for there to be a Chiyuv Bechor, so it has to be that its head and the majority of its body has to replicate its mother. Okay. Now, that is clear now that according to Rabbi Shimon, so he departs from the Tanakama of our Mishnah, and he gives his own position. That part's clear regarding Bechor, Ibai Lehu. La'achilam Ibai Rabbi Shimon Rosh Avruba, Olo. So is Rabbi Shimon also going to have a different threshold for Achila, Machalos Asuros, for the laws of Kashrus? So Le'inya Bechor Ksiv, now why would I make a distinction? Because when it comes to the Lachos of Bechor, the Petor says, Ach Bechor Shor, Ache Hu Ushor Bechor, Uvechor Shor. Aval Achila Gamal Hu Damer Rachman Adesar Hu. Ha ishtane megamal shapidami. Odim aloshna. So on one hand, we could say that this is all specific to a drasha. And if it's all specific to a drasha, so for the halachas of Bechor, he has a drasha. The drasha that we did yesterday, Rabbi Shimon just simply, he emphasizes a drasha. Meaning Bechor Shor. We learned in yesterday's daf that Bechor Shor tells us that there has to be some similarities. Rabbi Shimon's really looking at the same pasuk. But his understanding is that in order for there to be Kedushas Bechor, there has to be more than just some similarities. It has to mostly resemble its parent. Okay. But it could very well be that when it comes to Machalos Asuros and Kashrus and laws of Kashrus, Rabbi Shimon would just simply say, look, what did we learn yesterday? Gamal hu da'am rachmana da'asir. The camel's asir. Meaning the standard camel, this is what we learned in yesterday's daf, the standard camel is asir. What's a standard camel? Its mother's a camel. Its father's a camel. It's a camel. But if it's something where it looks like a camel, but it's really a mutation, and it came from a kosher animal, so that would be fine. And so that's one way to look at it. Odil maloshna. Or the other possibility is that there just simply is no difference. meaning that is just like Rabbi Shimon has a new threshold vis-a-vis Bechor, so too that same standard is going to be true regarding Kashrus as well. And so we begin. We begin now with a series of proofs that would seem to indicate one way or another. Tashma, we are on the very top of Zayin Amud Aleph. Behemah Torah Shealdim and Behemah Tamea, Asur Ba'achila. V'im Domer Rosh V'Ruba Limo Chayav B'Bechora. So, look, this Braisa is going like Rabbi Shimon, and I know that from the second half of the Braisa. Second half of the Braisa is because the Braisa is using the words Domer Rosh V'Ruba Limo. That's clearly Rabbi Shimon speak. And meanwhile, and in the second half of the Braisa, then and only then is going to be Chayav B'Bechora. But when you look at the first half of the Braisa, Behemah Torah Shealdim Min Behemah Tamea Asur Ba'achila. So in the first half of the Braisa, they are so dissimilar from one another, meaning we're looking at full mutation. As long as there now starts to be some similarities one to the other, so then it would be okay. Shma mina la'achila nami bayi, Rabbi Shimon Rosh Verubo. So it sounds like that in this Braisa, for even for kashrus purposes, Rabbi Shimon requires some replication. So the Gemara says, no, le'b'chor dafka. So the Gemara says, maybe not. Maybe what we could do is we could segregate the first half of the Braisa and the second half of the Braisa. Lola Bechor Davka. Dekanami. In fact, if a critical reading of the Braisa would indicate that. Dekashavka la'achila v'kam le'abachor. Shma minam. Le'bechor hu debay Rabbi Shimon Rosh Aruba v'alachila lo. Because if you look carefully at the structure of the Braisa, first the Braisa talks about the laws of Kashrus, and then the Braisa only afterwards mentions Rosh Verubo Dome Le'imo, where I need its head and the majority of its body to be similar to its mother, and then the Braisa talks about Bechor. So it could very well be that, as far as Rabbi Shimon's concerned, the high standard of the head and the majority of the body require replication, that's only for Bechor and not for Kashrus. The Gemara says, not necessarily. So it could very well be that, no, we're going to go back to our original way of understanding the Braisa, that the standard of Rosh Verubo matching is a standard for both Bechor and for Kashrus. And in terms of reading the Braisa, here's how we're going to read the Braisa. So, L'achila nami bayu Bechor itzirich sakadacham in a whole ksiv ach Bechor shor, achehu shor Bechor shor, velo tiske le Rosh Verubo, adi ikakula kamash malan. The Gemara says, here's what I would have thought. That maybe, as it relates to Bechor, Rabbi Shimon is going to be even more machmir. Meaning, vis-a-vis Kashrus, you need just simply Rosh Verubo. I say simply, by the way, in Rabbi Shimon Shita. I need Rosh Verubo. I need the head and the body to mostly match its mother in order for there to be an allowance of Kashrus, of Achila. And vis-a-vis Bechor, the Havamita would have been, I need even more. Why? Because Bechor Shoro, meaning that the indication of the Pasuk is, it has to be 100% match. And so now what the Braisa is emphasizing is that according to Rabbi Shimon, I don't need a full match, I just simply need Rov. Interesting, by the way, the Gemara is making a distinction over here, at least in Ahavamina, that there's a difference between Kulo versus Rubo. Generally we say Rubo Kikulo. Here, in Ahavamina, we're making a difference. Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, why don't we consider now the next Braisa? Achizelo sochlumi malagera umimafrise haparsa. So this you're not allowed to eat, even though it exhibits both kashra simanim. Now, that's a strange pasuk to understand. It has both kashra simanim, and we're not allowed to eat it. So the Braisa asks exactly this question. So now, if you remember, we basically dealt with the same question, if you will, yesterday. But over here, the Braisa addresses it somewhat differently. You're allowed to eat an animal that has siman echad. Okay? Siman echad meaning some similarities. Or the way we used the term yesterday, mixa simanim. Ve'eze ze'aba b'siman echad. So, ze tamei anola min atar. Ve'ibur min atar. So, this is describing an animal that it's coming from a non-kosher animal, meaning its mother was a non-kosher animal. V'iburu min atar. However, what impregnated the non-kosher animal was a kosher animal. So that means father was kosher, mother was not kosher. The product was tahor. Yachol afilu iburu min atamei. Hanola min ha... I'm sorry. Simenecha ve'zizze ababa simenecha ze'tamei hanola min atar. Let me quickly correct. No, what the Braisa is saying is that if its mother was Tahor, and it is coming out with Mitzvah Simanim, partial similarities, so then it would be fine. However, Ibur Minatar. Yachla Afil Ibur Minatami Tamalam Rasek Savim Vesei Izim. Ache Aviv Keves V'imo Kivsa. Div Rabbi Yoshua. And according to Rabbi Yoshua, it has to be where both mother and father are both of a kosher species. However, if the mother is a non-kosher species, so then it's not going to be acceptable. It's not going to be good. It's not mutar l'achila. Div Rabbi Yeshua, that's Rabbi Yeshua's position.
We're going to
come to that.
That's only one year.
We're going to come to that. So it comes out now that according to Rabbi Yeshua, if father and mother are both tahora, so then the offspring is going to be tahor, and you only need mixas simanim. Rabbi Eliezer Omer lo ba'kas of lahatir samoter ela lahosif alamoter. Now Rabbi Eliezer says no. We're actually going to go a step further. Rabbi Eliezer says that we are going to be even more lenient. According to Rabbi Eliezer, if the father's a non-kosher animal and the mother's a kosher animal, now we're assuming right now that the two could be mated, and the Gemara in just a moment is going to challenge that assumption. But we're assuming that they could mate, and if we breed the two and they produce an animal, according to Rabbi Eliezer, that animal is going to be permitted. So Oeno Ela Ibur Minatar Tamalam or Shur Se Ksavim Vse Izim Mikomakom. So Rabbi Yoshua understands, Rabbi Eliezer understands that based on the Psukim of Se Izim, Shur Se Ksavim Vse Izim, that as long as the mother was a kosher animal, even though the father was a non-kosher animal, the product is in fact going to be kosher. Okay. Now, Kari Le Tame Karabi Shimon. The Kamar Aval Ata Ochel Haba B'Simen Echad. So the Gemara says, now it's interesting. What just happened over here is that the Braisa is making reference to the idea that the offspring is going to be a Tamei, like what Rabbi Shimon describes, and meanwhile, the Braisa allows for its consumption. Meaning, again, let's go back to our basic question. Rabbi Shimon for Bechor has a higher standard. You have to have Rosha Verubo replicating its mother in order for it to be Chayv and Bechor. The question on the table is, what about Kashrus, Machalos Asuras? And right now the Gemara is proposing the following. If you look carefully at this Braisa, now by the way, this Braisa is not espousing the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon. It's only espousing the viewpoints of Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer. But meanwhile, in the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, we have something referred to as Tameh. And meanwhile, even though it's something referred to as tummy, we're allowing for its consumption. So isn't this speaking to the idea that basically it's going like Rabbi Shimon, and meanwhile making a distinction between Hilchos Bechor and Machalos Asuras? So the Gemara says, not necessarily. Vis-a-vis the standards of Bechor, maybe you're right. Maybe he subscribes to the idea of Rabbi Shimon that you need Rosha Verubo. And it could be that vis-a-vis Rabbi Shimon, the same standard would be true regarding Achila and Kashrus. And it could very well be that the author of this Braisa, Rabbi Eliezer, just doesn't agree on that particular point. So once again, we are right now not any closer to having conclusion of what is Rabbi Shimon Shita regarding Achila. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second, we can ask the following question, and that is, how can it be? How can it be that a kosher and non-kosher animal are going to get mated together, and they're going to breed, and they're going to have a child? The Gemara says, Chutz, now, before we get to the chutz, so you know, they're just simply incompatibility regarding different animals in terms of breeding. They just simply do not, they cannot breed together. With one notable exception, chutz me Rabbi Lazar machlukaso, shayu armim chaya mit aberes mi behema. So there is a position, which is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer and whoever agrees with Rabbi Eliezer, and they would say that a chaya can be mit aberet from a behema. This goes back to the discussion of koi.
It's a kvi, right?
Yeah. We're saying the same thing, just, different pronunciations. So the Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah di Avar Mikala ben Paro. So the Aliba de Rabbi Shimon Kamar. So the Gemara says, so you know what would be a scenario in which we can have this kind of breeding? So it could be where we have the following. we're going to go three generations. Generation number one is a cow. And the cow gave birth to something which was mutated. And its mutation looks like a non-kosher animal. The Gemara describes it as kalot, meaning that the hooves are not split. It's fused hooves. So in generation number two now, so it is a mutated animal. Now we're going to be assuming now that according to Rabbi Shimon, because of the mutation, we're not allowed to eat it. Now, comes out now that in generation number two, so it can breed with another cow. Because even though this animal has a fused hoof, but really, fundamentally, it is a cow. It just happens to be that it came out mutated. The Bryce is describing it as being not kosher as a Tame, because the Bryce is subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon. Now, if this mutated animal were to be bred with a regular cow, and they produce an offspring, now we're up to generation number three, so that offspring is going to be permitted. What just came out over here, according to this Brysa, is that the generation two mutated animal is viewed in the Brysa as a tame. So v'kamer avata ochel haba b'simenechad. Haba b'simenechad. So it comes out now that this Brysa seems to speak to the idea that according to Rabbi Shimon, this animal would be something which is prohibited. And so, Gemara says, so again, the Gemara says, look, the Braisa didn't say that it's subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon. We're assuming that, well, if Rabbi Shimon says it is not enough for Bechor, it's not enough for Achila as well. And it could just very well be that the Braisa agrees with Rabbi Shimon on the point of Bechor, disagrees on the point of Kashrus. L'meimer de Rabbi Eleazar savar zevet zegarim mutar, Rabbi Yeshua savar zevet zegarim asar. So the Gemara says, now, let's go over our two opinions of the Braisa we learned together. Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer are now disputing what happens in terms of animals mating. According to Rabbi Yeshua, mother and father have to be tahor. And then, as long as what comes out has siman echad, makes a simanim, so then it would be okay. It looks like a camel, but also, with some features of its mother, it would be okay. And according to Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer goes even one step further. If the father's not kosher and the mother's kosher, what comes out is going to be acceptable. Fine. That was the Braisa. And this touches on the topic of Zevzegore. When I have two things that are creating a third item, so this third item being the product, the result of two items. Now, over here, we're talking simply about sexual reproduction. The mother and father are going to be the Zevze. They're going to be the gorim. Obviously, with sexual reproduction, you need father's input and the mother's input. So, comes out now that according to Rabbi Yeshua, both father and mother have to be kosher. So, zev zeh gorim. So, that means to say that they both have to be kosher. When we say zev zeh gorim, we always mean one being non-kosher and the other being kosher. So, that means that according to Rabbi Yeshua, zev zeh gorim is going to be usser. Hopefully, I'm clear about that point. Gorim means it causes. And according to Rabbi Eliezer, Zev Zegorim is going to be permitted. Because according to Rabbi Eliezer, if the father's kosher and the mother's not kosher, the union and the product of that is going to be kosher. So that means that according to Rabbi Eliezer, Zev Zegorim is going to be mutter. The Gemara says, I'll tell you the problem. We know otherwise. If I have the offspring of a trefa, the father was in perfect physical condition. The mother was a trefa. Yes, back in Chulin, we had the debate and the discussion in terms of whether a trefa can actually carry and deliver a baby. But in the meantime, however, let's assume that that's so. The father's mutter, the mother's asur, Rabbi Eliezer Amar lo yikrov legabe mizbeach. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it's not fit to be brought on the mizbeach. Rabbi Yeshua Amar yikrov legabe mizbeach. And Rabbi Yeshua says, you can offer it on the mizbeach. Meaning, as long as the fetus comes out as a non-trefa, so then the fetus, of course, is going to be fine for kashrus. What about for the standards of the mizbeach? We know that certain things that are not fit for the mizbeach. So machlokes between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Now, comes out now that they are flipping. Rabbi Yeshua says that you're allowed to bring it onto the mizbeach, which is the, as far as Zev Zegarm is concerned, he's being more makel, contrary to what he said previously. And the same thing with Rabbi Eliezer. Here he's being more machmir, contrary to what he said earlier, which was when he was being more makel. So ba'amasavar Rabbi Eliezer zev zegarim aser. So the Gemara says no. Really, in general, Rabbi Eliezer holds zev zegarim is going to be aser like what we just learned. V'shani hachadim kem nechto akras sek savim v'izim. Maseh v'seh, I'm sorry, sek savim v'izim. Seh v'seh lamali. Over here, we have additional words in the psukim regarding the laws of kashrus. So shema mina semi komakom. So vis-a-vis the halachas of what would make for a kosher seh, so even if the both parents are not mutter, it still would be acceptable. So the default position, Rabbi Elazar, zevet zegar mizaser by kashrus. So we have a drasha. Rabbi Yeshua amalecha ba'alma zevet zegar mizmutter. And as far as Rabbi Yeshua is concerned, in general, we're going to say that zevet zegar is okay, is acceptable. V'achim kein lichton krash shur kesev ve'ez ksavim ve'izim lamali shmamina she'aviv keves ve'imo kifsa. So the fact that the Torah also gives us extra words and in the plural means that both mother and father have to be kosher in order for it to be kosher. That was a lengthy discussion and attempted proof to try to demonstrate whether Rabbi Shimon holds that the high standard of Kedushas Bechor, where you need Rosh HaVerubo, is that same high standard also necessary for Kashrus. And at this point in time, once again, the Gemara says, I don't know. Tashma, the Gemara, however, trots out a third brisa. And the third brisa over here could not be any clearer. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Gamal, Gamal, Shnei Pamim, Echa Gamal, Hanola, Mina Gamal, Vecha Gamal, Hanola, Mina Para. V'im Rosh HaVerubo, Doma Le'imo, Mutter Ba'achila. So, Rabbi Shimon in this brisa is clearly talking about Hilchas Kashrus. The repetition of Gamal once in Shemini and Parsha and the second time in Parshas Re'eh is telling us that it needs to be replication. Not full replication, but as long as Rosh HaVerubo Domel Imo, the head of the majority of body, looks like its mother, then and only then are you allowed to eat it. Okay, and we're clearly not talking about Bechor. We're clearly talking about Kashrus over here. So Shema Mina, L'Achila Nami by Rabbi Shimon, Rosh HaVerubo Shema Mina. So this third brisa could not say anything clear that according to Rabbi Shimon, the high standard that he had regarding Bechor is going to be the same as high standard as it relates to Kashrus as well. Period. Ad kan.
Well, the Gemara chooses to bring this last.
Right. So the in the process of learning, so the Gemara really enjoyed, thoroughly enjoyed, I'm being totally serious, thoroughly enjoyed the process in which we had brisa number one, which we could learn it one way, we could learn it another way, brisa number two, And the machlokes between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer, and then the stira between Zevet Zegarim and through another brisa, meaning the process of all the information that came out in the discussion is really what the Gemara thoroughly enjoyed. Continuing now, Bal Minei Merav Sheshes Mei Raglam Shel Chamor Mahu. So are you allowed to drink the urine of a donkey? Now, I'm sure that there's not a single Rav in modern day who has received this question. In terms of the permissibility of the urine, the donkey urine. Now, v'tibai desusim v'gamalim, so the Gemara says, now why aren't you asking me about horse and camel urine? So the Gemara says, desusim v'gamalim lo mibai luhu delo achire, velo dam l'chalav. You see, when it comes to the urine of horse and camel, so there it comes out clear. And so basically, it's very easy to see that basically water coming in, water coming out. Okay, and really that the horse and the camel are not putting any of their input into that liquid. So the Gemara says, Maya o Maya nafak. The Gemara says it exactly in those terms. Ki kamibale de chamor de achire. V'damu l'chalav, mai. However, the liquid that comes out of a donkey, so it's cloudy. And so basically it's like milk. Now, as we already got done saying, when it comes to the milk that comes out of a non-kosher animal, that's not kosher. So maybe this cloudy urine, so maybe it behaves like milk. So migufi kamim se vasiro dama maya o maya nafak vahidachire havo de bisrahu. And the way the Gemara presents it is that, look, on one hand you could say that it's really part, the donkey is really giving its input into it, and therefore it's going to be prohibited. The donkey obviously is prohibited. On the other hand, it could very well be that water comes in, water comes out, it's cloudy. In other words, it just went through the internal cavity of the donkey. It's warm in there. And so that is what resulted in the cloudiness, but it's still just basically water. So Amlu Rav Sheshes Tenisua. So Rav Sheshes says, we know the answer. Hayot say min hatame tame, vayot say min hatahor tahor. So if you read carefully the Mishnah, as we learned on, in yesterday, right? It's really hamed beis. So it's min hatameh and min hatahor. Mi tameh lo ka'amar, a careful reading of the Mishnah doesn't say anything that which comes from that which is not kosher. Ella min hatameh. But rather, it's min hatameh. What's the difference between that very subtle discrepancy? Take a look at the top Rashi on Zayin Amud Beis. Rashi writes, "Havimashma if it would have said mi tamei, havimashma mi gufei de tamei, min hatamei mashma mino shel tamei." Oh, really, really important distinction. So, if the Mishnah would have said mi tamei, we're talking about any derivative, anything that comes out of it. But that's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says min hatame, meaning a species like its mother. So vahaninami mina de tamehu. And over here, so even though it is not similar to its mother, but nevertheless, it's something which is derived from the mother, or not mother, we're talking about urine. But in other words, it's derived from the animal. And so therefore, it's going to be min tamei, and therefore it's going to be prohibited. Okay, so that is one way that the Gemara responds to it. And so right now, here's what we're saying. Donkey urine is going to be prohibited. Okay, I know, no one's going to run home now, get excited. But the...
Even though it's just like water, it says prohibited.
Right.
We learned me was prohibited, I thought. Min was prohibited, no? It came, right?
It has to be, no, in other words, min, if the fact, by virtue of the fact that it says min tamei, it's mina de tamehu. In other words, it has to be something which is deriving from it. And so this is deriving from it, and therefore it's going to be prohibited. Okay, that's version number one. And version number two, ika de amre, susim gamam lo kami bailehu, delo shasu inshi. So the Gemara says, look, as it relates to horses and camels, people don't drink it. Ki kami bailehu de chamor. So the Gemara says people drink it, and it's actually very good for Yarakona. Yarakona, some sort of ailment that they suffered at the time of the Gemara. I'm sure we suffer it now, right? The whatever the case is, so people drank it. So Amalehu Rav Sheshes Tinisu Ayotzim and Atami Tami Vayotzim and Atar Atar Vahaninami Mitami Kaso. So the Gemara says now here in the second version, it's much simpler. Right. You saw me struggle a little bit earlier with the subtle differences between mi tamei and min tamei. Over here, it's very simple. Comes from a non-kosher animal, it's not kosher. Case closed. So the Gemara says meisvei. Now, in the second version, where it's a much more simplistic way to look at it, where if it comes from a non-kosher animal, it's not kosher, so now this engenders the following discussion, which is going to become now super interesting. I already previewed it at the beginning of this morning. And that is, well, wait one second. What about honey? Meisvei. Mimnei ma'amru devash devar emutter. You know, bee honey's mutter, right? We all know it. But why? So mimnei shemachnei sesoso legufan ve'im ma'atzesoso migufan. So the Gemara says, because look, even though it's true that the bees ingest the honey, but it doesn't go through the body of the bee. So the, but over here, isn't it, in other words, again, with the simplistic second version of, look, it comes out of a non-kosher entity, it's not kosher. So as it relates to bees, so can we basically say the same thing? So the Gemara says, "Hu damar k'Rabbi Yaakov, damar duvsha rachman asharye." So the Gemara says, "Okay, so here's what we'll have to say: that yes, in our simplistic version of anything that comes out of a non-kosher animal is not kosher. So then, honey, in theory, should be prohibited, but Rabbi Yaakov says it's permitted, meaning gzeras akasov." D'tanya, Rabbi Yaakov amar achad zetoch lemikol sheretz ha'ov zeata ochav yata ochav sheretz ha'ov tamei. So So the first way the Bryce is presented to us is that you're also not allowed to eat sheretz of, flying creatures, meaning winged insects. So sheretz of tamei behedjik siv, what the Gemara says, we're darshaning that? That's a pasuk. So el sheretz of tamei, iata ochel va'ata ochel, masha of tamei mashritz. Ah, no, that's not what it meant. What it meant is that anything it puts out there, anything it discharges, that you're allowed to eat. Veza says the dvash dvarim, specifically referring to bee honey. So the Gemara says, Yachol af dvash gizim vehatsirim. So the Gemara says, now there are certain types of locusts that also produce some sort of byproduct. Call it honey. just because I don't have a better word to describe it. So Amar lo. Umar Isla Rabbah Zavarm Lahotzi Agizim Vatsiirim. So the Gemara says, so it's so interesting. So you're ready to permit bee honey, but these other extracts you're not permitting? These locust extracts? So the Gemara says the difference is as follows. When it comes to bee honey, so you know what we refer to that as? Honey. Meaning it has a standard term, a definition of just being honey. Yes, it's true that it did go through the bee, but we have a drasha that allows it. However, when it comes to the devash gizim vehatsirim, these types of locust discharges, so there they don't call them devash, they call them devash gizim, or they call them devash tsirin. So basically they are too attached to its source being not kosher, it being not kosher as well. Keman azlahad detani devash gizim vehatsirim tahor, umuter ba'achila deloker Rabbi Yaakov. Now there is a brisa that says that this locust discharge is going to be permitted. So the Gemara says, okay, and so this brisa is not going like Rabbi Yaakov. Okay, you're right. So tahor amah by machshava. Now the Gemara says, now it is tahor, meaning it's not really a food product. And in order to give it the status of ochlin, it requires a machshava. Now we've discussed this extensively back in the ninth parak of Chulin. You have certain foods which are not super edible, and so therefore, default-wise, they're not considered a food. However, if we have a machshava that we're going to eat it, so then we give it food status, and it becomes susceptible to tumah. And this locust discharge is like one of those items. So the Gemara says, look, in the Braisa, it says that if I have honey in the honeycomb, it is subject to tumas ochlin, even without machshava. So bee honey by itself is already a food. Chali dechimurta. Basically, you have these discharges that come out of a female deer. So, savar rabban lameimar. I'm sorry, period. Sorry. That's the end of the brisa. And so that speaks to the idea that that honey by itself does not require machshava, but these other discharges do in fact require machshava. Okay, let's do a little bit more. Chali dechamirta savar rabban lameimar by ninhu ve'asirin. Now, certain discharges come out of a female deer. What are those discharges? So, at first, the Chachamim thought that it were the eggs, and therefore it's going to be prohibited, meaning it's Eifer Menachai. So, Amr of Safra, Zara de Eilahu, Dalzabasar Ailaisa, Ve'aydi de Rachmat Sarla, Mizdakaka, Ve'azabasar Yechamurta, Ve'natre. So, the Gemara says, no. You know what it is? It's actually the hardened Zara, the hardened semen of the male, that tried to impregnate it, but it was just too narrow, and the seeds didn't go in, and so therefore it came out. And therefore, it is not, it's not Eiver Menachai. It wasn't part of the mother that came out of the mother, but rather, it was just simply discharge of the male. Okay, now in terms of making it sound appetizing, to say the least, no, not appetizing. But as far as halacha is concerned, so this is the halacha is referred to as pirish ba'alma, just waste matter. And so waste matter does not have the status of being not kosher. It's certainly unappetizing, but it's not kosher. Am Rav Huna, or haba keneged panav shel chamor mutter, maitam epirsha ba'amahu. When you have a newborn, and you have some sort of membrane attached to the newborn coming out, so once again, that is the status of perish. Again, I'm not speaking to its appetizing nature, but in terms of halacha, perish ba'amah, waste matter, not prohibited. Am le Rav Chista, tain de masayelach, or haba keneged panav shel adam, bein chai ben meis tahor. So the Gemara over here also speaks about certain afterbirth that's attached to the baby as it's coming out, so it's going to be tahor, meaning it's not considered human remains. Why? Pirsha. It's just waste matter. So, Maila beinu chai ve'imo chaya, beinu meis ve'imo meisa, and the Gemara says, now it seems to be totally irrespective to whether the mother is alive or dead. Lo, beinu chai ve'imo meisa, beinu meis ve'imo chaya. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Whether it is alive and the mother and the mother's died, whether it is dead and the mother's alive, Atanya beinu chay v'imo chaya, beinu meis v'imo meisa. So Itanya, the Gemara says, look, the Braisa says clearly, it doesn't really matter. Meaning that regardless of whether the mother was alive or dead, it coming out, meaning some sort of placenta, amniotic sac, whatever it is considered perish, it's considered waste matter, it's not considered human remains. And as a result of that, even though there may be human remains there in the room, But regardless, this is considered perish, and so therefore it is totally permitted. Okay, and we'll stop over here. Today we went over the halacha for the first half of today's daf. We went over the halacha of replication again, according to Rabbi Shimon. We know he has a higher threshold by Bechor. Does he have the same high threshold by Kashrus? And the answer is yes. After a lengthy discussion, the Gemara quoted a Bryce that said the answer is yes. Donkey urine, I know that's not an exciting question to us, but the Gemara dealt with that question. And as far as donkey urine is concerned, the Gemara had a discussion of whether or not that's just water passing through, or is the donkey actually putting it in its input. In the second version, the answer was very simple. Coming out of a donkey, it's usser. If that's true, and according to the second version, what about honey that just basically comes out of a bee? That should also be usser. So the Gemara discussed the bee honey. Obviously, it's mutter, but the question is why? And the Gemara cited various arguments in terms of why that should be.